This is Greg Bond with the UW Oral History Program talking to Lewis Richardson. The date is Monday, October 8th, 2012. This is our fourth interview with Lewis, but really we are reconstructing our first interview, which we did on September 21st, 2012. We had a technical glitch transferring that interview over to the computer and lost a lot of the data, so we really appreciate Lewis's willingness to be patient and help us out and reconstruct this first interview. In Madison, Wisconsin, at the UW Oral History Office, and Lewis is at his home in Fort Worth, Texas. So I thought we'd start, Lewis, by just asking you, for the record, to spell your name and then talk a little bit about your childhood and maybe about your parents a little bit to get that on the record.
Okay, name Lewis Richardson, L-E-W-I-S-Richardson, R-I-T-C-H-E-I-S-O-N. I live in Fort Worth, Texas. And, okay, now what, going to childhood?
Sure.
Okay. I grew up just like any other, I guess, normal person in Waco. I was born in Houston. And I stayed with my grandmother for a while. When my father first got his, I guess his first job was in Midland, Texas.
Mm-hmm.
Coaching there, I can't remember the name of the high school, but I should remember. I think it was Blackshear High School, I think is what it was. And I don't have any memory of being there. I've seen some pictures, but I don't really remember being there.
Sure.
I was so small.
Mm-hmm.
We moved to Waco. I went to first grade in Waco all the way through the fourth grade, graduating from Moore High School. Childhood, normal, play with all the other kids in the neighborhood. Got along mostly well with most everybody else. We attended New Old Baptist Church in Waco. Pastor was Marvin T. Griffin. growing up, I was brought up in an athletic family, I guess, because my daddy was a coach.
Mm-hmm.
So I played football, baseball, basketball, ran track, did all those different types of things. We had this big field next to my house, so everybody in the neighborhood, we come over and play football. We play baseball in the summertime. Basketball wasn't as big in Waco then as it is now across the country.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't have a basketball goal, basketball court, anything like that. Just at the gym at school. It was an outside court, maybe at my elementary school.
Mm-hmm.
Growing up with my father, I was able to learn a lot about football because when he brought film home, I would always watch it with him.
Mm-hmm.
I learned a lot of things from just looking and hearing him talk. And by the time I was in the seventh grade, I knew all the plays that the varsity football team used, knew the formation. I knew where everybody blocked and every different play against all the defenses that they ran up against at that time.
Mm-hmm.
Things weren't as complicated or whatever as they are now, but at the time I knew what I was supposed to know.
Sure.
Let me see, I started playing, I guess, flag football, fifth or sixth grade, and then started playing tackle football. In the seventh grade at the junior high school. And we had good teams. I think we won a couple of championships when we were in middle school.
Mm-hmm.
And we started playing varsity football. At the end of our ninth grade season, a lot of us got moved up to the JV team. So we played with JV, and then after that, played varsity ball from 10th grade to graduation.
Mm-hmm.
When I was smaller, when we first moved into the house we moved in, my daddy planted this, it was called a China berry tree. It had a fork in it.
Mm-hmm.
And at that particular time, I learned how to throw through that fork in that tree. And you start off on your knees throwing through the tree, and as the tree grew, I grew. And later on, we put a tile in the tree with a rope, and that way it could flow through the tire with a swing and a bend steel.
Mm-hmm.
So that was something I did growing up, and I think I started doing that when I was in elementary school, fifth or sixth grade.
Mm-hmm.
And they carried on through my high school years. I also practiced going in the in the gym at the high school. Now, high school and junior high school were all in one building, so we were all there together.
Mm-hmm.
So in the summertime, I would practice going in the gym against the wall with some fundamentals and some drills that we got from Don True, who used to be a quarterback at Baylor.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a record-setting quarterback, and he made a film. And I used all of his drills that he had, and which meant that you had to throw at least 100 balls a day in his drills. And mm-hmm. footwork and proper throwing of the ball and the way it was supposed to come off the wall and all those kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
let me see. You can jump in and ask him questions every time, but I know I can't remember everything we talked about.
Sure, sure. I did take some notes, so hopefully we can cover most of the highlights of that lost interview, which is too bad. So you became the starter at quarterback during your sophomore season at Moore High.
Yeah. Okay, I remember that. Now I was I played a lot, but we had a senior quarterback, and I played a lot. Didn't start at the beginning. But I would always finish the games.
Mm-hmm.
And after a while, I didn't find this out until after I graduated
mm-hmm.
high school. And my dad, I guess, I don't know if he got cold feet or what, but anyway, some of the coaches started talking with him, and some of the players even came to him and told him, look, why don't you go and start your son? He's better than the other guy anyway. It was kind of like he needed somebody else's approval, not just you.
Sure, sure.
So after that, I think that was kind of the fifth or sixth game of the season. After that, I started all the games after that.
Mm-hmm.
The next year, my junior year is when we won the state championship.
Mm-hmm.
There were really a lot of good seniors on that team. And kind of carried it. Excuse me. And I've forgotten. I think we had a 9-2 record or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And we went to the playoffs and went through that. And we met Jack Yates in the state championship game.
Mm-hmm.
It was really a close game. The final score was 16-14. They took the first lead, and we had a punt back for a touchdown, which tied the score.
Mm-hmm.
Johnny Farrell was the guy that ran the punt back. Second half, I think they were ahead, I think, 14-6, I think, at halftime, and we came out and scored on our opening drive.
Mm-hmm.
It was a long pass to one of the running backs, and it was about a 30-yard completion, I guess. And then we drove down to the 1-yard line, squeaked across for a touchdown. I think we kicked the extra point, then made it 14-13.
Mm-hmm.
And it was kind of back and forth, getting tough. And it was the fourth quarter. It was fourth down, and Dad decided he wanted to kick a field goal. And that's something we had practiced forever.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't done in the game. People just didn't kick field goals back there a lot of times.
Mm-hmm.
And so he threw the key. I'm not going to drop off the key into the huddle. And he said, Coach, I'll get the field goal. And I kind of looked at him and said, what? got home, and I kind of just did, what are you doing? He was waving his hand, keep the field going. Well, I still didn't leave it. So, anyway, we lined up to get ready to kick the field goal, and James Jones is the guy to kick the field goal. And, you know, perfect snap, I held the ball, and he kicked it. And I think somebody took a picture of that, too. And it went through the uprights, and that's how we got the 16, and he held on. And we kind of went back and forth in the fourth quarter, and at the very end, we had the ball last, and we came up on a third and seven, or third and something. I can't remember what it was. And Daddy's in the play and said, let's try to hit Gaines. Those guys all stayed tight end across the middle. And everybody dropped like they were supposed to. I dropped back and hit it right between the linebackers, and it ended up being probably about a 15-yard gain. And that kind of sealed it for us because they didn't have any more timeouts left. And we just ran the ball to the track and just ran the clock out. And we ended up on the 10 or 15-yard line.
I'm curious about all these national awards that you got personally. Do you have any idea or any sense if it was unusual for an athlete from an all-black school to get these awards, like be named a Parade All-American in the mid-60s? Do you get the sense that was unusual at all, or was that about the time sort of the mainstream press started discovering that there was this whole other side of football out that they hadn't covered before? I mean, you may not know. I'm just curious. It struck me that that might be unusual.
I'm not really sure. I just know in our hometown, we didn't get a lot of recognition. As of now, unless there was another sport, we were the last football team, or last team to win a championship there. Because a lot of our teams won baseball championships, too. I think But I guess if you gets put in the paper enough, somebody recognizes. Now, I don't know who the somebody was. It could be the college coaches.
Sure.
That were scouting and doing recruiting.
Mm-hmm.
But I know one of my teammates and myself were the first ones to be from the All Central Texas team.
Okay.
That had never happened before.
Mm-hmm.
That happened.
Sure.
And I'm sure there were other all-black schools and other parts of the South that may have been, guys may have been on those teams and getting recognition. I'm not really sure.
Sure, sure.
How that happened. Or what happened.
Mm-hmm.
It did happen. But it wasn't, I don't think it was because a lot of things were written up in the papers in Waco.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I don't know what that happened, how it came about.
And I understand that after your team won the state championship, Jim Brown came to speak to the banquet at the end of the year. That must have been pretty exciting.
Yes, it was. Because, you know, he was one of the top running backs. Well, probably the greatest running back of all time.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it so happens, Bill Glass, who went to Baylor, I guess had been keeping up with him because the coach at Baylor had been keeping up with him.
Mm-hmm.
And he played on the same team as Jim Brown.
Okay.
Somehow they got in touch with him and were able to persuade him. I know the jeweler in town, I can't think of his name right now, but I'm pretty sure he has something to do with it. They got him to come, and he spoke at the banquet, and you know, everybody was all excited when they found out he was coming.
Sure.
We didn't have a normal banquet like we were having in Nigeria or cafeteria or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
They had in the Coliseum there. But, yeah, I guess it just kept getting bigger and bigger of people that wanted to come.
Of course.
And so we had that. He spoke. They gave the coaches a lot of different gifts. They gave the assistant coaches TVs, and they gave Daddy a car. And he was really excited about that because I think they had kept that a secret from him. He had no idea that was coming.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And the other coaches didn't have any idea he was getting new TVs either. So that was kind of exciting for everybody.
Sure.
Because that had never happened before, and I think Fred, at that time, I'm not sure if there were stipulations on what you could give a high school athlete,
mm-hmm,
as far as awards or prizes, anything like that. But of course, we got our jacket. You know, you can always get a jacket.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But they gave us a little gold football. I don't know if it was a diamond in there or piece of glass. Anyway,
mm-hmm,
it was good. So, they gave us some of those.
Excellent. And do you still have that?
I think my mama has it somewhere. I don't, okay. If I had to find it, I don't know where it is. Anyway, because my mama has all the articles.
Okay. Yeah, I saw some of them. We were interviewing your father last May, and he pulled out some of the old articles about his career and your career, and we were looking through them. There's some really interesting stuff there.
Yeah. She kept all of that. I can't think of anything else I need to say about that right now. I can't think of anything else.
Okay. Did you play other sports at Moore High?
I played some JV basketball, I played, and I ran track. Track was the other main thing that I did. I think I missed it before.
Mm-hmm.
But my dad wanted me to run track. He didn't want me to play baseball. I played baseball in the summertime. And our summertime baseball coach was a high school baseball coach. And like I said, their baseball team was always one of the top teams,
mm-hmm,
in the state. And I thought I was a pretty decent baseball player. Probably would have played that too, but Daddy walked by the first day they had baseball meeting. He looked at me and he saw me sitting there. He said,
Father knows best, I suppose.
Yeah, I guess so. But and it helped me with my speed, helped me make my legs stronger.
Sure.
And I think I told you before too that everywhere I went, I always rode my bicycle.
Oh yeah, yep.
And I would love to be able to drive the car sometimes. But if I want to go to a Boy Scout meeting or go wherever, I'd have to ride my bicycle. And those places I had to go, we were learning about a car most of the time.
Sure.
But that was okay then, but you can't let your kids ride all over town anymore like you used to.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Yeah, you're right. And so my brother and I sometimes would ride together or whatever. I know I even participated in a lot of bicycle, exercises in our Boy Scouts, because we used to fall sometimes. In the Texas Texas Coliseum, when there was different events going on, you know, going in and out, you know.
Sure.
Like those type deals, but only with bicycles.
Mm-hmm.
Let me see. So as far as having a strong leg, because I'm not a big guy, and but for some reason it was hard for people to tackle me sometimes, but. And I attributed all that to running track and riding that bicycle all over Waco. So, like I said, I didn't understand what he was doing at the time, but, you know, later on I understood what was going on.
Sure. Sign of a good coach and a good teacher, I suppose.
Yeah, right.
So before we leave A.J. Moore High School, I was curious if you had any favorite subjects, what the academic side of high school was like for you, any memories about that?
Yeah, I liked English and writing. And I had a friend of mine who was good, and I liked science stuff. And I had a friend of mine who was good in math, and he wasn't good in English or writing. So we helped each other out. He helped me with my math, and I helped him with his writing and his English. So we both helped each other get through school. In fact, he's an engineer now.
Mm-hmm.
So I would probably say English and writing were my favorite subjects, and I've always liked science. Never grew up anything, but I like science. I like astronomy probably more than anything.
Mm-hmm.
So because I even had a little telescope today, I bought me a telescope once to look at the moon and all the constellation, all that kind of stuff. So,
sure.
What else did I like? Those are probably two main things that I liked in school.
Mm-hmm.
I know I always studied. I had good study habits. The teachers were always on us about studying and doing this and that and whatever it took in order to make a good grade.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I know starting in elementary school, in first grade, I was always made to come home and do something.
Sure.
Read a book, write, go over what you had at school. And I used to be so mad about this sometimes because first grade don't do that much.
It's a good habit to get into, though, I suppose.
Huh?
It's a good habit to get into, though, I suppose.
Yeah, it is. Because everybody else is outside playing, but we had to come in and study. Even if you acted like you studied.
Mm-hmm.
You had to do it. And there's about an hour time limit on there unless you actually had something to do before you could go outside and play with everybody else.
Sure.
In the long run, that paid off because I ended up having real good study habits and it carried through high school and through college.
Mm-hmm.
I know I don't know too many people that didn't them stayed up all night a lot of times studying the test or studying for this and that and doing papers at the last minute. Well, I never did that. I always had my papers ready 2-3 days ahead of time, sometimes a week. And I never stayed up all night studying anything for a test, anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
So a few nights that we might, I might have stayed up with some people at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. I don't know why I was doing it because I was... They had sleep while they were still trying to But I didn't do that. I always studied at every opportunity I could in between class. Especially on football season, because I didn't want to do a lot of studying after practice each time.
Exactly.
So I developed those. I find me a quiet place away from any and everybody else, whether it was in the library or... one of the nooks and crannies in the student union. Just sit down and say yourself, or sometimes I go to the building of the next class and sit in the hallway or whatever and study. And I'm proud to say I was able to get out of there in 4 years.
Yep.
And not too many people could say that, because most of them stay there a little bit longer, and some of them never graduated. But that was my goal, to graduate. 4 years, and I'm glad I accomplished that. I think we talked about the last time about how the coaches would pick our schedules for. When I first got there, I really didn't know any better. I wanted to go to business at first and taking these classes. And I began to realize, and like they. Go there and get your classes. I know the first year we were there, we had to go register for them. And I think I did that the second semester, too. And I think after that, I realized that we were supposed to be going to the advisor to get our class schedules so we could, have everything in order.
Sure.
It was supposed to be taken.
Mm-hmm.
And when I realized that, I didn't go to the coaches office anymore to get any kind of class schedules. And they called me on the first time, but I told them, I said, I'm not coming back up here anymore. I said, at this rate, I'm going to get out of here.
Exactly.
So that was kind of our first start out with each other. I know football, but over academic. And I'm glad I did that. I had to end up going to, I can't remember, I went to summer school one summer and went to two sessions. Two summers, but I think it was just one summer, two sessions, I think I had to make up. So I went from just doing 12 credit for 12 hours at a time, doing 15, and in my last two semesters there, I did 18 or more.
Wow.
I think my last one I did 21, I think it was 21. You have to get special permission to do that. So I did that, got out in 4 years, and there was one guy from junior college that had transferred to the school. I think another black guy that we got out. Now a lot of minor times.
Sure.
Everybody else did. That was good for me.
Sure. If we could backtrack a little bit before we go more into the Wisconsin stuff, it sounds like you were pretty heavily recruited coming out of high school, and I'd love to talk about that a little bit, too.
I know I had at least 60 different schools.
Wow.
That sent me, letters and things that made and people calling and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it was hard to try to decide on, which trip you're going to go on.
Sure.
And I do think at that time they had a limit on the number of trips. I can't remember if it was 5 or 6 you could actually go on. But I ended up visiting at Baylor and SMU because the Southwest Conference was just opening up. Opened it up so blacks could go to the schools and participate in sports.
Sure.
Jerry friend of ours was at SMU.
Mm-hmm.
There was nobody at, that was been, had been recruited at Baylor, but they had one player, his name was, last name was Austin.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't on scholarship, though. I think they finally ended up getting him a scholarship. No, his name was, our name was Westbrook. That was his last name.
Okay.
Anyway, when I visited SMU, Vibes was really trying to get me to come because he was the only one there.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, man, you need to come so I can have some company. Somebody else to talk to.
Sure, sure.
And I really seriously thought about it because I probably, I don't know if I would have picked Baylor or SMU over any of the other schools or not, but I gave SMU some serious consideration.
Mm-hmm.
I did Baylor too, but I probably needed more to the SMU than Baylor since they already had one guy that was there that I gave a scholarship to.
Sure, sure.
I visited with the University of Washington. I visited UCLA, Wisconsin, and I went to one of the Ohio. I went to Ohio University in it's in Ohio, but it's in Miami.
Athens, Ohio, I believe.
I forgot what city that place is in, but I didn't visit Ohio State. I visited the other one, and that color was blue.
Mm-hmm.
Ohio, I forgot what city it's in. So I was trying to visit different banks, schools.
Sure.
Oklahoma wanted me to come and visit, and I told them no, I wasn't really interested in going to Oklahoma.
Why not?
Yeah, I can't remember. I think I was more threatening with going to UCLA than I was anywhere.
Okay.
So,
why was UCLA so interesting to you, do you think?
Well, it was California. I like UCLA uniforms, and I like USC's uniforms. I don't know why.
That's what happens to teenagers.
Yeah, you're right. But I like the offense that UCLA ran, and I like the Gary Beavers, their quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
And I like the coach that they had, Coach Pinkel.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just drawn and attracted to that place, and there were some people that were from my high school that was there.
Okay.
They didn't go one in UCLA, they just lived in Los Angeles.
Okay, sure.
And so I knew, so it wasn't like I'd be going to a strange place and didn't know anybody.
Mm-hmm.
So if I hadn't gone to Wisconsin, that's why I would have gone to UCLA. And then, you get pretty nice on all these trips. Everybody's on their best behavior at the time. When you go, like when I went to SMU, I was there with Jerry Levine.
Sure.
also, when I visited SMU, Tony Smith, Bubba Smith's brother, was being recruited by them too. So he liked that to be good friends.
Mm-hmm.
And there were a few other people from the Beaumont schools there. And you see, we didn't visit UCLA together, but we visited SMU. I'm trying to think of somewhere. I think we lived somewhere else. I can't remember where, though. And everybody kind of showed you a good time. When I was at UCLA, Mel Small was the top running back there then, and so he's the one that took me around and showed us a good time.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, he played his professional ball at with Trev, and Trev was kind of pretty decent.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's a big time crossbow for that too in the Detroit area. I visited another Big Ten because I visited Iowa too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Everything was kind of standard. You know, they tell you things, and they say they're going to do this and that.
Of course.
And I'm sure they would have, because at that time, even though that stuff still goes on today, it's not as prevalent now as it was. They kind of keep a watch on them, pass the money around and stuff like that. But I wasn't like Cam Newton. Nobody offered us $100,000. anyway.
And who was responsible for recruiting you for Wisconsin?
I think it was Dale Penny.
Okay.
I think that's the one. You know, Milt Broom was the coach then.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was, I think that's who it was, Dale Penny. Along with my daddy.
Mm-hmm.
He had gotten hired there before I made up my mind where I was going to go.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, and like I said, I was leaning toward UCLA, but my mother was just like, baby, you're going to break up the family. You're going to go somewhere else. What are you going to do here? I was like, mother.
That's hard to argue with.
Yes, it is. And, you know, it was all good, but I was busy. And I wasn't expecting that from her.
Mm-hmm.
Just did that one day. When I told her where I thought I was going, either daddy had told her that. I don't remember how. I just thought transpired, but she couldn't believe it. She couldn't believe I was seeing my girl somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway.
And I guess one last question before we leave Waco and come up to Madison. The mid-60s, of course, are sort of the height of the civil rights movement. I'm curious if there was an active civil rights movement in Waco when you were there, and if you took any part in that.
It was kind of different in our town. There were no necessarily riots and fire hoses and all that kind of stuff like mm-hmm. before, maybe in Alabama and Mississippi.
Sure.
The first thing that integrated in Waco was a convenience store. And then, right after I left, the places like Woolworth and Texas, those places that have those counters where you go in and order sodas or sandwiches or whatever, those integrated
mm-hmm.
and opened up.
Mm-hmm.
For some reason, the people in Waco, I guess, were watching TV.
Sure.
And they didn't want all that going on in Waco.
Mm-hmm.
But they felt like they were kind of getting close to that because when we were demonstrating for the convenience store,
mm-hmm.
it was kind of a constant thing. There was always somebody in front of the store. And because we just thought it was that one.
Sure.
And I guess everybody thought, well, maybe that's serious, and this may could escalate or whatever. So it was kind of a smooth transition as far as a lot of different problems that may have occurred.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, when I was in Waco, it was just kind of starting there.
Okay.
And then I left.
Mm-hmm.
And but when I came back to this and whatever, things that kind of moved over, and there was not a lot of problems. There was a lot of resentment, maybe, but things, you know, kind of was smooth as far as compared to other places.
Sure, sure. That's interesting. Interesting.
Yeah.
So you come to Madison in 65, 66, around that time?
66, yeah.
66. What was your transition to Wisconsin like?
That was the first time I'd been around a lot of white people
mm-hmm.
At any one time, so it was kind of exciting and scary at the same time, and I was always wondering how I was going to measure up academically,
mm-hmm.
You know, coming into that environment. The university is one of the top schools in the country.
Sure.
And, you know, in my high school, we a lot of good teachers, but it was still no comparison.
Mm-hmm.
Because at our school, just like you read before, that we would receive all these books from the other public schools that were there, dance
sure.
and things of that nature. So we never had the top books or the first edition books that the other white kids had. So going to Wisconsin, you know, there was a little apprehension, you know, about the unknown, not really knowing. But so, because of my good study habit, and because of maybe a slight fear of failing, I really studied.
Sure.
Because I didn't want to be the one not to make it
exactly.
a problem, you know, about that kind of stuff. I did not want to end up back on the phone somewhere, so... I know my parents didn't want that. I didn't want to disappoint them.
Sure.
They didn't want to disappoint me either. So, but it was different. You could tell some professors were open-minded and didn't mind you being in that class. You could tell some of them were not used to being around black students.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Some of them had, you couldn't tell what the expectations were. Some of them, they had low expectations.
Sure.
And at the time, they told us, I think I mentioned this before too, they told us that there were about 200 black students on campus, and we as athletes kept wondering, well, where are these 200?
Sure.
Because we never saw them.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think we realized that a lot of them were grad students.
Mm-hmm.
They already had degrees, so they weren't going to be in the same class as we were in.
Exactly.
And they probably had families, they were in other parts of the campus or whatever, and we just wouldn't see them. Every now and then you might see a group of people, and they had a lot of foreign students, and I'm pretty sure they were counting the African students as part of the black population.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I'm pretty sure they were part of the 200.
Mm-hmm,
and I
mm-hmm.
think we realized that because in the city of Madison, there were only at that time about 1,000 blacks in the city.
Sure.
So between the university and the black community in the city, there just were a lot of people that didn't used to, because they had to come from Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they were all black high schools, and guys in my situation were from all black high schools. And neither one of them maybe the people in Chicago may have had more contact with whites, because I think sometimes they may have played some of the private schools, the private schools.
Sure.
And then a lot of times they had those L's, those L trains.
Mm-hmm.
They probably rolled those.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times where he didn't. We didn't do a lot of, there was not a lot of books at all.
Sure.
Unless you go back, I think, unless you go to the dorm school.
Did you live in the dorms during your college career, or did you live at your parents' house?
The first year.
Okay.
First year I was in the dorm.
And how did that go?
My roommate was David Goldfarb, Jewish guy from Florida.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you talking about, he was small. He was a nerd. and it seemed like he never did a lot of studying. It isn't bad. It seemed like he went, but he was out making good grades.
Mm-hmm.
He helped me with some stuff, too. You know, which was good. And I haven't seen him since then. So I don't know what he's doing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the transition went, you know, I guess as well as could be expected, and then each year there were more and more black students coming to the university, so that helped a lot.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But it was still, you know, not what we were used to. We were just in a different environment.
Sure. It's a different culture, to be sure.
Yeah, they're not a coach. And a lot of the students that were there, the only thing they knew about us is what they saw on TV.
Yep.
And that made some people afraid, some people curious. And you got along with some people, and some people you didn't get along with. They avoided us, we avoided them.
Sure.
I don't remember any kind of, I guess, fights or whatever. You know, there was a lot of disagreement in the dorm sometimes about certain things or what people wanted to do, what people didn't want to do.
Sure.
But I spent my time playing football, practicing, and studying.
Yep.
So I didn't get involved in a lot of other kind of stuff.
Sure. So you're on the freshman football team in 66 then. How did that go?
That was great. We were undefeated. And I got the most valuable player on the freshman team. There were a lot of good athletes on that team. There were a lot of guys from Texas on that team.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of guys from Chicago. And so it was kind of a blend in here. They all get kind of used to each other too.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought, and the white guys that we played with, I don't think any of them, there may have been a few, had ever played with black players before.
Mm-hmm.
And so they were just like us. We had been white players before. So, you know, we all had to kind of blend each other. And we all seemed to have gotten along pretty well and came together as a team since we were undefeated.
Sure.
And we beat teams and ended up, the Michigan team ended up going to the Rose Bowl and a couple of other teams. So it was just, I don't know, bad being on a good freshman team and then the next year going through the was, it just seemed like everything just fell apart.
Mm-hmm.
Ain't one reason because Bill Brewer wasn't there anymore. So,
mm-hmm.
You know, when some guy recruits people and somebody else comes in, you may not be that the people that they want.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Or
sure.
Whatever. So, anyway, the first thing was okay. I ended up liking that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think last time you talked about the spring game, I guess 67, the spring game, that didn't go so well?
At the end of the freshman season, it's when they changed coaches. I think they got rid of Coach Bruin, I guess, in the football season.
Mm-hmm.
And the new coaches came in, John Coates. And his staff. I think there were a few couple maybe holdovers from the old staff, but everybody else was new.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them I don't think had coached in college before. I think some of them had only coached in high school. So that was a learning experience for them too.
Sure.
Coda had been, I'm trying to think, was Coda? I can't remember if Coda was assistant at that time. Anyway, he's the new head coach now.
Mm-hmm.
So during the spring, we would practice at the campus at school, and on the weekend on Saturdays we would go and play in different cities. And he would just kind of drum up interest in the team.
Sure, sure.
That was a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
And we played these different scrimmages, and I think we did it in three or four different little towns. And I thought, and so did some other people, thought I had a pretty good spring.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of my classmates and stuff, they were excited about going to try to play the next spring game at the stadium. So everybody was saying, yeah, we're going to come to see you play and blah, blah, blah.
Sure.
And all during the spring scrimmages, we'd always share time. There were other quarterbacks, but we always shared time. And but some reason on this spring game, we didn't charity band. They divided the team.
Mm-hmm.
And first quarter goes by, and I don't get any action. Second quarter goes by, I don't get any action, and I start asking, well, what's the deal?
Mm-hmm.
Am I going to play with my turn? And the guy said, oh, don't worry about it. You'll get your chance later. And one time, I remember before, he told me, stop asking him that. I'm wondering, why did he stop asking me? I've been playing like the other time.
Mm-hmm.
Why am I not playing now?
Sure.
And he couldn't give me an answer. So, third quarter goes by, and I still don't play. And I can't remember what my emotions were like or what I was feeling, but it wasn't good.
Sure.
And I began to wonder, is this the beginning of the way things are going to really be or what?
Mm-hmm.
And so finally, somewhere in the middle of the fourth quarter, I don't know how many minutes were left, whatever, I get the game. I completed one long pass, which put us across 50 and ran a couple of plays, and then the last, oh, I guess it was 25 yards, whatever it was,
mm-hmm.
It was one of our option plays or whatever, and I ran a touchdown, broke a tackle or two or whatever it was, and threw it, and that was the only score for our side.
Mm-hmm.
So it ended up being 7-6. And we missed the 2-4 conversion. So now the game is just about over. And I remember to this day that I'm sitting in my locker. I was probably that one of the last ones. I was sitting in my locker. I was actually crying because I could not believe that it happened.
Sure.
And when the senior quarterback was to be a senior quarterback, his locker was next to mine. He was talking about, well, I don't know what happened. Just got to work harder and blah, blah, blah. I just looked at it.
Sure.
What are you talking about? This has nothing to do with work at all. This has something to do with why did I get my first year down to play?
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, so, yeah, I started working a little harder, but then after that, they coach came to me and wanted to know what I switched position.
Mm-hmm.
And Daddy didn't think I would switch because he was opposed to it. And I guess I was at the point of maybe I should now. And so I agreed. I reluctantly agreed. And so I played that for a whole year.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the beginning of the next game, they decided to put me back in quarterback. And he ended up being the first string quarterback, going to start the season off.
Mm-hmm.
At the beginning of fall practice off as the first string quarterback. And that went on for the whole time. And then when we get to the game, we're going to have another safety play.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as a senior in high school and playing on the freshman team, I never, I had gotten past, you're always nervous.
Sure.
But I had gotten past being a shaky nervous. I hadn't been like that in a long time, but mm-hmm. I was a little nervous this time.
Sure.
And the first pass I threw was an interception. And, but in my mind, I'm thinking, okay, I screwed that up. When I go back in, I'll be a little bit relaxed because I had been hit, and I was, just a little bit more relaxed. And mm-hmm. The thing I know is he said to me, we're going to take you out of the game. Because I'm getting to get back on the field, and Coach Carl grabbed him on, and normally we're going to change. And I said, we need to change it. We're going to go with the other guy. Well, how are you going to do that? I was going to be on the table. What series? And I know we had some words right there.
Sure.
So being a good person, I said, okay. So the other guy it is out there, and I know he threw. I don't remember if he how many interceptions he threw, but that game was over, and then so the other guy stuffed the second game, and I think before I told you that he had thrown six interceptions, but I remember later on he threw seven. And after the first one, you know, I didn't think anything of it. And after the second one, I got up and started rolling it up. And then the third one, taking snaps and standing close to the coach. And well, coach, I don't get a chance to go in. And, no. And then on the fourth one, he threw a fourth one. And it was so funny, he threw one. He was trying to throw one back of bounds. Got intercepted. It was near the end of the half or something, or whatever. And he tried to throw one out of bounds, and the guy intercepted the ball. Then, man.
Sure.
So after the fifth one, I just sit down. I said, you know what? I'm not going in. And so he threw seven or seven that day.
Wow.
And then they decided to try another guy. And this guy threw three that day. And after, I thought maybe I'd get a chance going in, but I didn't. I threw a third, but I didn't get about the pitch game. Well, I was off the pitch. I just didn't do any more warming up. And then they went back to the other guy after the next game. So that was just kind of. And once I think when we were playing Michigan, it was cold and wet, and the guy got hurt. Or a play or two. And I went in, and first play, I ran about 50 or 20 yards. Next player completed the pass, and after they took me out. So that was the end of that. But that was my first experience that stood there the whole year.
Sure.
After one interception in the first game of the year. So I never understood that. Then. At the end of the season, I think we had maybe one more game to go, maybe two. I had a long conversation with Coach Cody. It wasn't a pleasant conversation.
Sure.
And I can't repeat everything that I said in conversation either. But we got to be how I needed it. And I left out of there. And the sister just look at me. He goes, "You were." Say, "Yeah, I said it." and I walked back. That evening. And after the practice, I told all the fellas, I said, "Yeah, I had a talk with him." And they all wondered what was wrong.
Sure.
But I already told all of them I was going to talk to him. And they wanted to know what happened. And they could tell some of that because he was a different person at practice. He was somewhere else. And I knew then I had to see him, I called him. That would be it. And I know I had mentioned before that during these times, and I don't remember which time it was, that my dad walked in. It might have been my senior. I don't remember which time it was that he walked in and he saw the names on the board. And I think they kind of abruptly came to stop talking, trying to cover up what they were saying. The people they were thinking about maybe trying to get rid of or what could they do, you know, things of that nature. And I don't know how many of those types of meetings went on.
Sure.
Without him being present. So. That's basically what happened then. And then my senior, they had another quarterback in, a white kid, he's a freshman, but it's his sophomore year now, and they decided they wanted to go with him.
Sure.
When I was a sophomore, they didn't decide that. It was just almost like they were trying to do what they should have done when we were all younger.
Sure, sure.
And we found more. But it was kind of like the snowball. It was almost too late then. And I was determined not to switch. I wanted to take quarterbacks where I came back for. And they brought in two or three other quarterbacks. You think one? Really, a total of four that I can remember. I think they played some. When I was a sophomore, they were freshmen, I said, and that was one guy with me who was really good at football. But he wasn't as fast as I was. He could throw a football better than I could. He was taller than me, too. But I just knew a little bit more football than him. So that's one of the major differences between us. And so when he got to be a sophomore, he just wanted to start playing defensive back.
I think that covers most of the ground that we had covered in the first interview that got lost.
Okay.
I'm going through my notes. I think we've covered most of the things I wrote down, unless there's anything else that you want to add for those first couple years in Wisconsin. I think this is a nice segue into the second interview where you talk more about 1968 and 69 and those next couple years.
No, I can't think of anything else now from the
person,
and kind of runs together. But
sure, no, I certainly understand. All right, I think
if you think of anything else, my thing is that you always call me or send me an email, and we can talk again. But I don't have a problem with that.
Sure, we certainly will do that. I think this concludes this interview with Lewis Richardson. And again, just thanks for your patience, Lewis, for helping us reconstruct this interview that just got lost in the ether somewhere.
Yeah, you're right. It's okay.